It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. I'm a little bit late to the microphone. A couple of buttons, you know, me, buttons, problems. But we're off and running for the 8th day of January 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you find us on the interweb tubes. And if you go there and you... Sorry, I just saw something in the chat room. And if you want to chuckle at Smokey the Bear pointing at a family and says, "Watch me eat this family," I'm sorry, that just struck me as funny. That kind of stuff happens all the time in the chat room. If you'd like to wander by, well, over at HeadOn.live, just click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in to the merriment. Because it is a merry, wacky, madcap, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza. Mm-hmm. And if you jump in there, you'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Bill and Hoghead and Sailor Chick and Otto and Squeaky and BT Blom, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a spacing guild master, has decided that this just isn't the day to be folding space and becoming Man Cave. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. You might recall that Titanic Tuesday is reserved for those moments of titanic white wing intellect that are the philosophical, cultural, and political equivalent of seeing a giant iceberg dead ahead and deciding to crank up the engines to full steam and give that iceberg some what for. Mm-hmm. We get Titanic Tuesday from something that happened many, many, many years ago now in White Wing Radio in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, when our buddy Jim tuned in to the morning monotone just in time to hear an exchange that went something like, "Hey, Steve, how come it is that there's seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach." To which the morning monotone replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Mm-hmm. Yep, Titanic plates. Yep, right. Still no word on the whereabouts of the case of Titanic Sterno at the bottom of the ocean. No. But that's what Titanic Tuesday is all about. And of course, to begin the program, we have thanks to send out. Yes, we do. Thanks going out to our subscribers, partial sponsors of the program, who help keep the program on the air to the tune of about a week's worth of funding. Thank you to Brendan. And thank you to Marcia. Thank you so very much, Marcia, Thanks as well to Ron in the far frozen north. Thanks to Tom. Thank you, Tom, very kindly. Thank you as well to Nancy, and thank you to Dwayne. Thank you, each and every one, for your participation in this little long-running experiment now of independent, liberal, progressive media. No ads, no buy gold now, no Swedish mattresses made of foam developed by NASA on which you can bounce a bowling ball that you can then pick up with a vacuum cleaner. No wave radio ads, no General Steel building ads, flooring ads, none of that. With hardwood flooring direct from the deforested areas of Southeast Asia. Nope, none of that. It's just our conversation. And the way we avoid all of that is by folks like the aforementioned subscribers who kindly keep the program on the air. If you'd like to be a subscriber, the subscriber group would love to have you among their company. Just run over to headon.live, click on PayPal, check that box that says make this happen every month. Tom Steyer, you check that box and just write down the number 1 and start writing zeros until your hand gets tired. Okay? That would be just great. Or typing zeros. There's no actual writing in it, but you get the idea. Thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa, who lets us know loud and clear on this Titanic Moran Tuesday, or is it Moranic Titan Tuesday? It's anything you need it to be, whatever gets you through the night, just like John Lennon said. And so also thanks going out this evening to Cecilia. Thank you, Cecilia, so very much, and thanks to Libby. Thank you, Libby. All of which comes together to mean that we have a fundraising goal this evening of $405. Yep, 405, which is down from 450, which is a good thing. So 10 at 40, 40 at 10. 40 new subscribers in one day, that's almost impossible to contemplate. But that's where we are. We need to raise $405. We got about $700 in bills that are coming due midweek. And that's sort of a sine qua non to keeping the program on the air. So that's where we are. $405 to raise on this Titanic Tuesday evening to get even for the end of last week and the beginning of this one, and hopefully something will happen along the way. Obviously, I'm in a state of mourning. My beloved Crimson Tide fell on their faces last night and were beaten by an obviously better prepared and hungrier Clemson team. Wasn't much of a game, really. Although for the Tide haters, I'm sure it was a great one. Oh, well. But that's, So now we wait for the next. Well, now it's off to college basketball and the NFL playoffs. Congratulations to the Eagles having knocked off the Bears. The team formerly from San Diego did okay, too, didn't they? Yeah, I think so. And now it's 2 hours and 50 minutes or so until whatever the mad ramblings are that Julius Geezer is going to sort of mouth at a camera. Rumor has it, and I'm not at all surprised, that this rhetorical nightmare is being written by, of all people, no surprise, I suppose, Neo Maxi Zoom Dweeby and Guy with Spray on Hair and Nazi Wannabe Stephen Miller. According to April Ryan, a contributor for CNN and a White House correspondent, she said her sources did confirm that Miller is in charge of writing the supposedly 8-minute speech. And April Ryan referred to Miller as the president's favorite immigration guru. And there will be a comparison in the speech between the big border boondoggle and the wall that Israel built to hem in the Palestinians. April Ryan went on to say, this is about a wall to keep brown people out. That's a problem. It's a racist wall. It has been described as an immoral wall. But it's also a stupid wall. We talked about that last night, the fact that trying to build a wall in a floodplain is not a particularly enlightened decision. It also violates a treaty, a 1970 treaty. Remember that as well. But the larger issue then becomes the question of why, and virtually every network has caved on this. MSNBC, NBC, CBS, CNN, etc., they're all caving on this, even though when that one in our White House, the Kenyan Muslim usurper, back in 2014 wanted to deliver a speech on immigration, the network head said, no, no, we can't do that. That would be, it would be too politically charged. This is a political issue, not a national security issue. We can't be giving speeches about it, just giving up our precious, valuable airtime to the Kenyan Muslim usurper. It just wouldn't be right. It wouldn't be right. And the little white wing racist birthers would have us sad. So we'll take a pass on that speech, Mr. President. But now the guy who was heading the white wing birther movement, Julius Geezer, made the same request, and after a little bit of head scratching and pissing and moaning, all the network said, well, yes, sir, Mr. President, you just called us the enemy of the people earlier today, so golly Moses, we'll give you your airtime in the hopes that maybe you'll call us the enemy of the people a little bit less, and aren't we silly people for even thinking that? Yeah. Fortunately, this program will end right at the time the speech is beginning. So I'll do my shrieking and barking here without anybody having to hear me do it. But it raises the question. Given that we know that this is going to be a speech, that is nothing more than a stew of lies and invective, racism and bigotry and xenophobia, the question becomes, what could Donald Trump do? I mean, after all, he's called the for-profit millionaire media the enemy of the people. What could Donald Trump do that would make those aforementioned network executives say not just no, but oh, hell no? I mean, they've been caught in a ridiculous lie about 4,000 terrorists caught at the border. That turned out, that wasn't just a lie. That was a giant lie, and it was a lie that they tried to promulgate over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and Chris Wallace wasn't having any of it and made Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags out to be the liar that we all know she is. Maybe it's Maybelline. Maybe it's lies. No, it's the lies. So does anybody want to chime in on that? What could or would Donald Trump do that would make the network not carry the speech?
Well, I'm definitely going to do the speech naked, and I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to use, and I'm going to point my little Trump right at the camera and go pee-pee.
Would they refuse to carry that? How about if he just kept his clothes on and announced that he was ordering machine gun nests along the border and was giving shoot-to-kill orders to the military? Yeah, would the network executives quit fawning then? I honestly don't have an answer. If you do, share it. I don't give out the email address enough, I guess. BobKincaid@gmail.com or send it to me on Skype, whatever. What could Donald Trump do that would make the network's executives say, nope, sorry, that's just a Trump too far. We just can't carry that. That's a mouthful of a question there, Clarity, but so this means you're the opener for a Stephen Miller Theater of the Absurdist failed Jew to support our very own Zionists wannabe walling in? Maybe. I wonder how much the airtime's worth that's being given away. It's a lot, but then again, remember, the networks gave away billions of dollars in free airtime to Donald Trump when he was just a punchline to a joke about the Republican nomination. Yeah. And I'm still waiting to see whether response time will then be given to, say, the Democrats. Then again, let's remember the now departed from CBS for sexual harassment, Les Moonves. Remember those prophetic words he issued, back in 2016? Donald Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS. It remains true. And tomorrow morning, he'll be tweeting,
I had great ratings. I had great ratings for my speech last night. The best ratings, the greatest ratings since, I had the best ratings since Roots.
Mm-hmm. Brother Deacon Asa asks, have you pondered the fact that Chlamydia Claudius might use his little speech tonight to declare a national emergency? Yeah, I have. And the powers that come with that are might shocking, downright stunning. And so, it comes with being able to turn off the internet and things like that. But he won't do that because that would mean turning off Twitter. Ah, well, okay. Cutting right to the heart of the matter, Flavio up in a balmy Wisconsin says, They wouldn't air him if he were a black president. That's pretty to the point, isn't it? Clarity pointing out, this is a one-sided wall. There's not a both sides here. What's that, Randy? CBS may not be good for America, but it's great for the horn. It ain't good for my blood pressure, I can tell you that. Yeah, what's that, Marty? Yeah, Marty says, so will there be MyPillow ads? There will be, right? Wouldn't surprise me a nickel's worth. But it'll be great for the networks. And it remains to be seen whether anyone will be allowed to rebut him. Yep, 4,000 terrorists. 4,000. That was, again, Sarah Hasselbalch Sandbags over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, where they're desperately trying to salvage the credibility that Sarah Hasselbalch Sandbags no longer, you know, has.
18. They were on the terror watch list. The media seeming to downplay that number, saying only six. But isn't one too many and a serious threat to our country, especially when you think about 9/11 and the number of hijackers they had? Here to weigh in is the vice president for the...
Well, the thing is, the fact that they were on the list doesn't mean necessarily that they were actual terrorists. We've been shown that before. The terrorist watch list is a rather notorious thing, and it's notorious for getting shit wrong. But do continue.
National Border Patrol Council and a Border Patrol agent himself, Chris Cabrera. Chris, there's a sense that there's a higher number than that, but they really can't share a lot of that information.
Yeah, you know, the potential for people coming across terrorist organizations infiltrating with migrant groups is a very real threat to our country. If you look at the border right now, the easiest way to get in would be through the southern border. It's a path of least resistance. And you partner that with the fact that a lot of our areas are undermanned in some places, in some cases unmanned.
And yet, oddly enough, even the people who are on the list more are called at the northern border than the southern one, because the southern one has a lot of desert in it. So, you know, there's that. That being the case, however, there's also the notion, and I'm just trying to figure out the logistics of it. So the terrorist wants to slip in with a group of brown people coming across the border. So I guess he flies into Guatemala City, and then he goes to Huehuetenango department and goes to one of the little towns there, like Nenton, from whence came little Felipe Alonso Gomez. And then he walks 2,000 miles to get to the border, where the best hope he has is to be captured by the Americans and put in a concentration camp. That's our... Isn't it going to be hard for him to be particularly terroristic in one of our concentration camps? Oh, what have you said, Bob? Now the white wingers are out there, be out there arguing, oh, concentration camps work. No. Yeah, but let's continue.
And that's a very, very dangerous combination.
Yeah, that's the number we got from Sarah Sanders from the Communications Department of the White House. And you see some of that headlines there. An update on the situation at the border in McAllen, Texas in particular. The president chose to go there. What's he going to see?
Well, he's going to see tons of people walking up every day, turning themselves in, hundreds at a time. We also have a we have a lot of people that are coming in and still trying to avoid detection. It's very
wait. The terrorists come up and turn themselves in. This isn't working out quite as well as I imagine the booker there on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda had hoped.
Busy out there. This week has been kind of slow, but previous weeks we're seeing hundreds a day out there, sometimes up into the thousands. It's very busy in McAllen. It just doesn't seem to slow down.
All right. By the way, here's some numbers in the Rio Grande or McAllen set in the Valley sector. Illegal crossings: 48,000 people in 2017, 63,000 people in are expected in 2019 as we start on that year. And the question is, if there's a sense out there that there's going to be a crackdown, guess what happens at the border right away? There's going to be a huge surge. Are you guys ready for that?
You know, I think in McAllen, we've been dealing with this surge for the last few years. I don't think we don't have the manpower that we need. That would be nice to get that. But I think our men and women out there will get the job done no matter what.
Chris, how much would a physical barrier help you now or improving what's there?
It would help a great deal. I mean, it has helped. We see it every day. I'm out there every day, and for people that are trying to elude detection, it's very instrumental in helping us do our job.
Chris, how long can you tread water in a massive flood along the floodplain of the Rio Grande? When the wall is going to become a giant dam? Do you have Border Patrol, like? Swamp airboats, or are we going to need a new budget line item for that? Yeah, I think Steve in New York's right. You know what the real problem is, Bob? We're using thought, logic, and rationality to try and address complete and utter morality. Consider, they turn themselves in, which is how they stay hidden. Yeah. If you're looking for something different to do, though, Flavio has a viewing suggestion. For the most part, viewing suggestions are the province of our buddy Scott in San Diego. But Flavio's chimed in with this one. Instead of watching Trump give his stupid, hate-filled, ignorant, fascist, written by Stephen Miller speech, Stormy Daniels will fold laundry in her underwear on Instagram live at the same time.
You were great. You fold laundry great. You remind me of Ivanka.
Yeah, every time that goes through my brain, I just shiver and get through. All better now, I think. I hope. Mm-hmm. But the stupid played on.
And it's also very beneficial for the communities. It keeps the car chases and the foot chases through the neighborhoods during school zone time. It keeps it to, it stops it in the neighborhoods. It forces those people coming across to go into areas where it's safer for us to do our job.
You mentioned you have to hunt some people down or trying to sneak in. The families want to be caught. What are the facilities like for the families that turn themselves in hoping to get in?
You know, the facilities are getting better and better. When they first popped up, when we first opened up in 2013-14 with our central processing center, it was it was a little rougher than it is now as far as creature comforts of home. Obviously, it's a jail.
Yeah, you know, obviously we keep children in deliberately chilled rooms, and if they happen to get some form of flu to which they have absolutely no immunity whatsoever from some American Border Patrol agent. And if they happen to die, well, you know, if you want to make an omelet, you're going to have to kill some children. Right? Curiously, the asshole on Fox never gets around to asking Mr. Border Patrol about whether or not he'd be willing to spend the night in one of those hellhole concentration camps.
Also, it's not the Holiday Inn, but, you know, as far as you know, what you can expect there. Obviously, they're going to be treated well. They're going to get hot meals. They're going to get showers.
And the flu.
Television. We're a very short-term holding facility.
And
no more than 48 hours. And after that, they get transferred over to wherever they're going.
It's just not equipped. You're just not equipped to handle what's happening right now. It's
no,
unbelievable.
Not.
You're not. Chris, thanks so much. We'll see if you get some relief beginning tonight. And what the president will see on Thursday, we'll be tracking it all.
Yeah, because Geezer Disgustus is going down to the border to demagogue it a little bit more tomorrow. Yeah. My favorite part of that, though. On Sunday, Chris Wallace pushed back on the 4,000 number. We ended up with the 6 number. You know, 3,994 less. But that look at the ciphering on the fly. But that doesn't say there aren't any other numbers out there that haven't been unveiled. Well, there's lots of numbers out there. 2, for instance. The number of working brain cells that are actually firing away inside Julius Geezer's noggin. Also, 2, the number of children killed in American captivity. See, there are other numbers out there. There absolutely are. Wait a minute. Courtesy of Mike in Cascadia. Stop telling us Ivanka folds laundry, Bob. You know she's never folded a fucking thing in her spoiled life. Absolutely, Mike, and thank you for that. Tonight's obligatory Stop Telling Us, Bob, brought to you by Mike in Cascadia. Ron in Raleigh, subject line, terrorist watch list. Remember, Ted Kennedy was on the watch list. The watch list is bullshit. By the way, did you see the Mango Mugabe in the briefing room with all those CBP goons the other day? Why do they all have shaved heads? That's just weird. Because they're right-wing skinheads? I mean, can we try that? Maybe, sort of. I mean, that's my best guess. Oh, sorry for the lack of hockey puck warning. Monique chastised me for no hockey puck warning on the previous clip. Uh-huh. Steve asks, did you see this horror? Were immigrants at the U.S.-Mexico border photographed with numbers written on their arms? And the answer is yes, they were, because, well, it's what we're becoming. They had to write it in Sharpie because they couldn't get any tattoo artists down there quickly enough. Steve noting that the Border Patrol brown shirt was a, and this is a complicated legal term, fucking liar. Scott in San Diego offers up, if the networks had any guts, there'd be at least one TV feed of Trump's speech that features a loud buzzer along with a superimposed he's lying graphic whenever Trump ventures into terminological inexactitude territory. You know, like those old Joey Zuzu car commercials in the 1980s. That would be pretty damn good. In fact, I was thinking about it. Why not? Just, you know, ding, lie, ding. And all that, look, I mean, we don't use it anymore, but there are delays out there that'll give you up to like 2-3 minutes if you want it of delay time in real time. And a 3-minute delay would give you ample opportunity at the network to call out each and every lie. And you could just, and it, yeah. But there's even a problem there. Because just calling out the lies is insufficient. Because there are several tens of millions of people in this country who frankly don't give a good goddamn that he's lying. They like that he's lying. It provides a service for them to broadcast his lies for them. And no amount of fact-checking can change that. But those 4,000 terrorists, just because, and this is a perfect example of what I just said. They got caught straight up lying to their captive friendly news network. And even Fox felt it necessary to point out that, well, they were lying. And then, you know, the morning zoo crew tried to rehabilitate it, but Chris Wallace, you know, caught him. And so it didn't matter. MSNBC's Hallie Jackson did a sit-down interview with Mike Pencilneck Geek. And he straight up lied to her face.
ISIS at our border.
Mr. Vice President, thank you, sir. I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, Hallie.
Thank you. Let me bring in now NBC News National Security and Justice reporter Julia Ainslie, A.B. Stoddard, Associate Editor and Columnist for Real Clear Politics, and Tamara Keith, White House Correspondent and host of the NPR Politics Podcast. So, guys, there's a lot to get to. And, Julia, let me start with you, because I'll be honest, I was a little surprised to hear the Vice President again raise that number, about 4,000 known or suspected terrorists, when that has been widely debunked. It's one of the most headline-grabbing, misleading claims that members of this administration have made. And Vice President Pence knows that. Explain the facts here, as we tried to do in that interview briefly.
You did, Hallie. You fact-checked him. And this administration has been fact-checked multiple times over the past few days on that figure. So it's interesting to me that they're still using it. But yes, there were about 3,775 total people who were on watch list that the U.S. has, based on intelligence reports, that they wanted to stop entering the United States within fiscal year 2018. The vast, vast majority of those came through airports. You're right. And we broke that number down even further yesterday. We found that in the first half of 2018, only 6 came through the southern border. Now, we don't have data for the second half of 2018, but projecting along those trends, I think you and I, most rational people, would think it'd be pretty hard to get anywhere near 4,000 when you're starting with 6 in the first half of the year.
So, one of the things, oh, sorry, go ahead, Julia.
Oh, no. I mean, one of the things that they're doing here, you're right, is they are now conflating this. And they go from 4,000 on watch lists, and then they start to throw in 3,000 of special interest aliens. And they're starting to confuse the issue so that all that sticks in people's minds is thousands of terrorists at the southern border.
Confuse the issues. They don't care. They know that if they repeat 4,000 terrorists, 4,000 terrorists, 4,000 terrorists, that eventually the soft skulls out there, well, you know what, Marveline? We got 4,000 terrorists. Thank God Jesus' best friend Mike Pence and Jesus' baby brother Donald Trump is out there making America great again. Jesus. It's intentional. They meant to. 4,000 terrorists stopped by trying to enter the United States by various means. Six. But this is exactly the point. Being caught in a lie doesn't slow them down because they are incapable of being shamed. By the way, in regard to the skinheads, Border Patrol guys, Flavio sends along a note. Those bald goons surrounding Trump last week are straight-up white nationalists. Border Patrol Union endorses extremist video featuring white nationalists. The National Border Patrol Council, the union representing Border Patrol agents across the country, is featured in a new video that includes white nationalists and anti-Muslim extremists. The video, titled Killing Free Speech, was endorsed by the union and recently shown by agents at a private screening in San Diego. The video is also expected to be shown in Texas, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C., according to union representative Terrence Schig, president of the San Diego chapter of the NBPC. The nearly hour-and-a-half-long video refers to Democrats as dark and evil and features a bevy of American and European far-right anti-Muslim white nationalists who make a correlation between gang rapes, Islam, and immigration. The documentary also features members of the Proud Boys, a hate group designated by the Southern Poverty Law Center that often aligns with white nationalists and are known for being misogynists and anti-Muslim. The Proud Boys participated in the deadly Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, and in mid-October, several members of the Proud Boys were arrested in New York City after a violent street confrontation with anti-fascists. How about that? The Border Patrol has a white supremacy Nazi problem. Who would ever have imagined? Well, we did. But yeah, in point of fact, the Proud Boys with their fucking MAGA hats and Gavin McInnes. Well, back in late December, the New York Times published videos that showed in clear images the riot that the Proud Boys tried to get going. And showed that the Proud Boys were, in fact, the aggressors. And there's no doubt about it. The Proud Boys said that they were only responding to anti-fascist violence. But the videos from the New York Times show two Proud Boys charging at an anti-fascist group to get the violence going. Because that's the way Nazis and brown shirts operate. No, it won't be on TV, Scott. Scott wanting to know if the video would... No, it'll be screened in Dallas and D.C. and L.A. That's just Texas. Maybe San Antonio, El Paso. Yeah. So you're not likely to... Marty wants to know, numbering of detainees. Well, which tech company do we think will get a contract to introduce tattooing the detainees burned in by laser scan like from the Terminator? I was thinking more like the machine from Idiocracy. Not sure! Matt in San Francisco says, picture this. Take the 45 and skinheads and put it next to Nancy Pelosi's swearing-in picture. And that's all you need to need to have an accurate picture of America today. Aggrieved white people, aggrieved white males, incels, and the like, as compared with a picture of diversity and inclusion. You're absolutely right, Matt. Dave from Talibandiana with a note. Hey, Bob. Julius Geezer's going to declare himself dictator tonight. You just watch. And the Trumpanzees will go wild. By the way, I'm putting a $10 challenge on the table for any new subscriber. I'll cover 10 bucks if they become a subscriber tonight. And, if we can get a new subscriber this evening, Dave will double your first month. Thank you. Thank you, Dave. Dave continues and says, according to my gray cells, old Trumpian politicians from here on shall refer to themselves as Richard Tater, so that no one will confuse them with people who actually know what they're talking about. They still want to tell us what to do because their Lord and Savior Donnie is willing to make a scroll up on our crosses. First it was St. Ronnie, now it's Donnie. How do you complete that little prayer, the tricky Dickster just asking? Just asking. Dictator, yes. I think there's an old joke about little Sweet Tater coming home and saying she was in love with Donald Trump. And Idaho Tater and Irish Tater, her mommy and daddy, said, well, you can't do that, baby. He's a dictator. I'll be here all night. Don't try the veal. But back to Mike Pencil Neck Geek, because it is Titanic Tuesday. When Hallie Jackson asked him about the lies about the border, which we've already dealt with, she also asked him about because Julius Geiser said he had been consulting with former presidents who told him that the wall should be built. Mike Pencil Neck Geek is not ready for prime time. Not by a long shot. Let's see if we can get this rolling. Yeah, there we go.
Which former presidents told President Trump, as he said, that he should have built a wall? All their representatives have denied that that was the case.
Well, I know the president has said that that was his impression from previous administrations, previous presidents. I know.
No. He's lying. Mother and Jesus don't like it when you lie, Mikey. Nobody, he didn't say, I was given an impression. Because, for starters, Julius Geiser would never use the word impression. As big a word as that can't get through the spirochetes and the Adderall. There was nothing about impressions, Mike. You're a big Ten Commandments fan, Mike. Did you forget the one about thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor? Or against thy country? Or against thy former presidents? Because in terms of former presidents, we have exactly Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, W., and Barack Obama. For the sake of clarity, a spokesperson for former President Carter put out a statement today saying, well, former President Carter certainly didn't advise him to build a wall or say he wished he had built one. And in fact, President Carter heartily opposes the wall. Barack Obama is on. Oh, come on, Bob. He just makes shit up. He's a liar. Liars lie. It ain't complicated. Impression?
Well, I know the president has said that that was his impression from previous administrations, previous presidents. I know I've seen clips of previous presidents talking about the importance of border security, the importance of addressing the issue of illegal immigration.
Yeah, you know, that's not saying there should be a wall. There's a difference.
That's different from telling the president, though, right?
But look, honestly, the American people want us to address this issue.
So to clarify here, a national emergency is something that constitutes a threat to the health and safety of Americans, for example. It is not clear if the president will declare one tonight. But I'll tell you, in that interview, the vice president repeated that claim that has been debunked as misleading about the number of suspected terrorists or immigrants coming across the southern border. But he did make clear the president is feeling resolved in his stance. Democrats are, too, which means that unless somebody starts to give in, this shutdown could stretch even longer than it's already gone on.
And that's the bottom line. This is a hostage situation. And we really, really, really ought not be negotiating with a terrorist. Because that's what Donald Trump, you know, is in this instance. The WIC program, Women and Infant Children, that provides badly needed prenatal and neonatal and infancy food supply for mamas and babies, will soon shut down because of this ongoing hostage crisis precipitated by the President of the United States. That's just one of the one of the programs that's affected. Thousands of people, according to an analysis by the Center for American Progress, thousands of people are being impacted in Alaska, Arizona, Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Maine, and North Carolina. In just those seven states, there are some 45,000 federal employees who are furloughed or are working for free. And those furloughed federal employees do things like helping Native Americans, working with small businesses, working with immigrants, and working with people who fly planes. Meanwhile, in the Senate of the United States, they tried to hustle through a bill to bash people who participate in the BDS movement. Only the Democrats didn't bite and said, no, the only thing we need to pass, we don't need to pass anything now except a bill to reopen the government. And there are stories out there that run at least counterintuitive to my understanding that say that Mitch McConnell is sitting helplessly by while shut down, blah, blah, blah. Bullshit. Bullshit. Mitch McConnell is enjoying this because Mitch McConnell is, for want of a better word, evil. Mitch McConnell hates the idea of government. Mitch McConnell likes it when women and infant children don't get the food that they need. Because remember, he's a Republican, and that means that he considers those folks to be useless eaters. Mitch McConnell could simply let the Senate consider their passage of the bill that the Senate actually passed first. It's the same damn bill. And the fact that it's not being done is on no one but Mitch McConnell. Okay? Can we be clear about that? This isn't some sort of nuanced discussion. This is the Republican Party enjoying public policy becoming a matter of a republic of you know the Republican dystopian nightmare that they have in mind for all of us. Those seven states, curiously, examined by the Center for American Progress, are represented by Cory Gardner, Susan Collins, and five other Republican senators who are up for re-election next year. And since they considered Kentucky, that means they're including Mitch McConnell as well. You know how we were talking about, you know, there's numbers and then there's numbers? Well, as of Friday, every missed payday will result in costs to federal workers in the total around $2 billion. Sam Berger at the Center for American Progress said, from small businesses to new homeowners to farmers to federal workers, millions of people across the country are feeling the effects of Trump's shutdown. But Trump cares more about his poll numbers and Fox News coverage than the lives of the people that he's hurting. The American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE, issued a statement insisting that the Senate reopen the federal government, saying the women and men who keep our country running deserve to get their paycheck on payday. It's unconscionable that starting this week, those who have worked tirelessly at our airports and federal prisons, among many other work sites and offices, will come home empty-handed. They deserve better, and Congress and the administration must be better. Here's the breakout on those seven states. There are 230 native tribes in Alaska for a total of about 110,000 indigenous people in that state. 2,500 Interior Department employees work in Alaska. 1,100 people work at the FAA and the TSA. There are 900 Department of Agriculture employees. And, you know, they're all not getting paid. The USDA food distribution program on Indian reservations will run out of funding by the end of this month without an end to the shutdown. That program provides nutrition assistance to 90,000 low-income Native Americans in Alaska alone. There are 7,300 federal employees furloughed in Arizona, 15,700 in Colorado, 2,600 in Iowa, and over 6,000 federal government employees in Kentucky. 850 at the Bureau of Prisons, 1,000 Department of Agriculture, 3,300 IRS employees. And Mitch McConnell is simply saying, fuck y'all. This is another moment to wonder if maybe Tom Steyer could spare some of his move to impeach advertising money to just start running anti-McConnell ads in Kentucky. Why is Mitch McConnell hurting our fellow Kentuckians? Tell Mitch McConnell, screw telling Mitch McConnell anything. Get rid of Mitch McConnell in 2020. Doesn't this just make lovely sense? That's probably why it won't be done. I know, Monique, I know. When are people going to take to the streets? When the cable ain't on anymore. And for federal employees not getting paid, that may be sooner than we think. So here we are at the top of the hour, and I have thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly to Jack in Shreveport, who got us started. We've knocked the fundraising goal down to Jack single-handedly knocked the fundraising goal down to $355. Thank you, Jack. Thank you very much. And remember, Dave from Talibandiana has said he will double the first month's subscription if we get a new $10 a month subscriber this evening. And that would be tremendous. Thank you. Thank you, Dave. And hopefully someone will hear you and say, hey, I'd like to turn my $10 into $20. It's very kind. Oh, by the way, Jack says, I noticed that I had to do an extra step to send money to friends and family this time on PayPal. There was a change button that allowed changing to that from the default of paying for a product or service, so you know, do pay attention to that. It affects the fees. Steve in New York says, I think Mitch loves the idea of government, oligarchical government. It's the democracy part that he despises. And remember, Mitch has things to be nervous about because nobody loved the NRA like Mitch loved the NRA. And the NRA was completely, became a wholly owned subsidiary of Mother Russia during the 2016 election cycle. So who knows how much tainted money went into his war chest. Megan says, Trump speech and wall. Bob, I'm glad you're taking it in stride, but I'm freaking out here. What are the odds he'll actually declare a national emergency and order the military to start building? Rumor has it that he's considering taking $20 billion from the military to do this vanity project. What are the odds the military will revolt? Worse, considering the shutdown, what are the odds the growing desperate financial conditions could cause a riot in D.C. or in another American city? If so, would that give him the reason he needs to declare martial law? All we can do is wait and see if he's going to declare a national emergency, but I'll say this much. 800,000 federal workers who are either working without pay or gone home, that would be a mighty showing of humanity in Washington, D.C., say, gathered around the Capitol of the United States or gathered around the White House. And not leaving. Because whether Julius Geiser understands it or not, he has created the opportunity for people to engage in civil disobedience and resistance that they previously did not have. Because the whole reason that protest in D.C. doesn't do much good anymore is because everybody shows up on Thursday and Friday, that you have the thing on Saturday. Everybody's gone by Sunday. So you can just ignore it. But with people who don't have to be back on work at work on Monday, now you have a situation in which people can come and stay. And some of this has historical echoes. Some of this reminds me of, well, of course, St. Ronnie of Raygun, who fired every last air traffic controller when they dared to walk off the job. I dare say there are probably a lot more TSA workers than there are air traffic controllers. And it's going to be a real problem if they walk out. Now remember, they're not allowed to strike. But under my theory, Donald Trump has gone on strike against them. And even said so. I think of it more as a strike. He's gone on strike against them. He made the first move. What would it do to air travel in this country and around the world, frankly, if the TSA simply walked off the job and said, best of luck? I saw a tweet the other day from someone who said, I asked the TSA agent if I should remove my laptop, if I should open my laptop and turn it on for her. And she said, I don't give a fuck. I'm not getting paid. Funny how white wingers, Republicans, maggots, love them some capitalism until it starts coming back at them. And I would argue that one aspect of capitalism is that in a free market economy, labor has a right to withhold its service. Worth thinking about. By the way, Scott says, don't forget the housing vouchers that help with rent costs for many Americans. Those are also on the chopping block. This train wreck chain reaction is not pretty, and it is entirely avoidable, provided the people in charge are actually interested in avoiding it. And right there is the rub. Martial Law asks David from South Carolina, Stan, what if President Obama had threatened to declare a national emergency, threatened eminent domain and martial law? Well, you would have had a million people in D.C. The Emrys and Marvelines would have been activated and weaponized by Fox News, News TV, Radio Rwanda, the Koch brothers and various, the Mercers and various and sundry racist white-wing organizations would have funded an entire goddamned juggernaut armada of buses to bring the mouth breathers and knuckle walkers to D.C. To scream for the head of the Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House. There is no doubt about that whatsoever. Yeah, I did, Ron. Ron in Raleigh asks, did you read the article by right-wing jagoff Max Boot comparing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to Sarah Palin? It contained the following. In some ways, Ocasio-Cortez reminds me of Sarah Palin, a comparison neither woman will appreciate. Palin was another talented young communicator who made a big splash in national politics before having her lack of knowledge painfully exposed. Instead of studying up, Palin gave up any pretense of seriousness and has now disappeared from the debate. This is a cautionary tale for Ocasio-Cortez. She is a politician of immense gifts who can have an outsized impact, but only if she masters the intricacies of policy and curbs her fatal attraction to political celebrity and vacuous soundbites. Fall, fall, fall. Harumph. As Ron says, talk about some tortured logic. Sarah Palin couldn't hold AOC's maiden forms. It's the damn truth. And by the way, Sarah Palin wasn't young when she came to prominence. Damn sure wasn't 29. And Sarah Palin took, what, 10 years to get her college degree? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez got hers from Boston University in every bit of four. And had some time to dance along the way. Charmingly, joyfully. But the point is, Max Boot is one of those never-Trump Republicans. Anti-Trump Republicans. Oh, he's killing the Republican Party. And some on our side say, oh, look, yeah, oh, we love him for saying that. Thank you for being a truth teller. But the problem is, as we see in this article by Max Boot, they're just going to go back to being the same as they were at the first available moment. Oh, yeah, the Max Boot piece was pure swill. Maybe we'll get into it here in a little bit. But for now, let's take a quick break and hopefully knock down a little bit more of that $355. I mean, even if we could knock down $200 of it, just one night's radio, that would be awesome. And we're $150 from doing that. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Jack in Shreveport. So, lo and behold, Brad and Desi are back from their holiday break. I miss the Green News Report when it's gone. So we'll check that out, then we'll come back and go to the phones. If you're on hold, please stay on hold, and we'll start the conversation radio portion of the program in short order. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. And I'm little old Bob Kincaid.
It's Tuesday, January 8, 2019.
While we were out,
there were toilets overflowing, littering, cars parking off-road.
Government shutdown impacting national parks and federal scientific research. Trump EPA launched another serious attack on public health. Plus,
we must also face the existential threat of our time.
The new Democratic House majority pledged to act on our climate crisis.
All of those crises and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We can turn the ship in the way we want to go, man. Towards love, creating a healthy planet for all of us.
The dude abides, man. This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, just to make it clear, that was Jeff Bridges at the Golden Globes in our snarky comment there.
Yes.
Talking about turning around this ship, as in this boat, on the water. Just to be clear, in case there was any questions about what he said.
Good point.
While we were out, a whole lot of stuff seems to have happened in the green world. You got a lot to catch up with in 6 minutes.
Indeed. National parks advocacy groups say the Trump administration's decision to keep some national parks open with little or no staff during the shutdown of the federal government could lead to permanent, irreversible damage to public assets and serious loss of revenue. No one is collecting entrance fees at national parks or enforcing regulations that protect the parks and its visitors. No one is collecting trash. Bathrooms are overflowing, except where local volunteers have stepped in.
Yeah, it's been local folks, contractors who are pitching in, buying toilet paper, cleaning out latrines. It should not happen this way.
Even parts of Yosemite National Park had to be shut down because visitors were using the roadside as a toilet. The government shutdown is also taking a toll on science and research as well. Many government scientists' work has been halted because they are barred from doing research or participating in official activities during the shutdown. At the annual Meteorological Society conference in Phoenix this week, many studies on climate and weather had to be withdrawn because National Weather Service and NOAA scientists are barred from attending.
Barred from attending? We're talking about hundreds of scientists who are not allowed to go because of the shutdown?
Right. But there are some bright spots. The ongoing shutdown is also delaying controversial oil and gas exploration in the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge. And it's also preventing federal agencies from approving permits for oil and gas pipelines and oil industry seismic testing in the ocean that harms marine life.
Well, isn't that just like you, finding an upside?
Well, there's no upside here. In one of the last official acts before suspending operations, the Trump Environmental Protection Agency formally proposed to change how it calculates the health benefits of reducing toxic mercury emissions from coal-fired power plants. The Trump EPA wants to eliminate the benefit part of its cost-benefit analysis of the impacts of regulations, like the health benefit of people not being poisoned by mercury. By not calculating the public health benefits, the Trump EPA can claim that the mercury and air toxic standard is too costly to industry to justify. Now, the utility industry has asked the Trump EPA to leave the rule in place. However, the Trump administration can also potentially use the new calculation to justify rolling back other public health rules that it deems not worth the cost, and constrain future pollution regulations.
Bottom line, more dangerous mercury in our air and water because the Trump administration just wants it that way?
Yep. The proposal is now up for public comment at regulations.gov and will likely be challenged in court.
Good.
But some good news. Democrats in governorships around the country and the new majority in the U.S. House of Representatives are taking action to protect public health. As one of her first acts, Michigan's new Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer signed an executive order requiring state officials to immediately report health and safety threats. Officials with the previous administration of Republican Governor Rick Snyder failed to do so as evidence mounted that Flint's water was contaminated with lead. Finally, new Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi received a standing ovation during her opening address when she promised, as Speaker, to use the new Democratic House majority to address climate change.
We must also face the existential threat of our time, the climate crisis, a crisis manifested in natural disasters of epic proportions. The entire Congress must work to put an end to the inaction and denial of science that threaten the planet and the future. It is a security decision to keep us all safe and a moral decision to be good stewards of God's creation.
Environmental groups are a bit disappointed that Pelosi's new House Select Committee on the Climate Crisis lacks subpoena power and an explicit mandate to develop legislation for a proposed Green New Deal. But hey, it's a start.
For much more on all of these stories and on the Green New Deal, should it ever happen, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And so we're a little bit short of the halfway mark of the program this evening. Note coming in from James in Illinois. A reminder. You can whip someone to make them work. You can't force them to work smart. Or keep them from breaking a tool or two along the way. And, of course, in terms of numbers, I referenced the PATCO firing. Reagan fired 11,000 striking air traffic controllers on August the 5th, 1981, according to Flavio. The TSA says there are roughly 51,000 TSA agents involved in the airport screening process. That's a lot more, and even I know that with my limited ciphering skills. That's a lot more than 11,000. And overall, you take 800,000 Americans and put them in Washington, D.C., not leaving. Maybe check in with the Standing Rock folks. They know a little bit about living in living outdoors in harsh winter conditions and how to make structures where people can stay nice and warm. Like, say, maybe on the Mall in D.C., an encampment? What's he going to do? Mow people down with machine guns? Well, I mean, granted, there's historical precedent for that because that's what the coal companies did during a strike on Paint Creek here in my county back in the early part of the 20th century. But you can't imagine and firing everybody and then hoping you've got enough scabs to come in and take those jobs. I know. Lee in New York, Palin college degree. Sarah Palin has a college degree. What'll she tell you her degree was?
98.6.
98.6. Yeah, thanks, Lee. That was worth a jingle. Matt in San Francisco asks, what is it with right-wingers' hatred of fully actualized and unafraid gay people? They seem to be more than happy tapping their loafers when we're in the adjoining stall at the airport. That's another one. I don't think there's one unified field theory answer to that, Matt, but I think it has a lot to do with the fact that they don't even get to enjoy heterosex. My best guess. Darlene in Connecticut says, and it's a safe bet that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was never cowardly enough to shoot defenseless wolves out of a helicopter. Your daily dose of snark from Darlene from Connecticut and member of the sorority of Leans. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you very, very kindly. Hey to the sorority of Leans. Thank you very kindly to Elizabeth jumping in. Thanks very much indeed. We are now $25 closer to wiping out at least one night's funding for the program. We've wiped out what was left over from Friday now. And let's see. We got 330 total to go and 130 total just to wipe out a single night. Thank you so much. Thank you very, very kindly, Elizabeth. That's very, very kind of you. And I'm sure Elizabeth would love to have some company. Elizabeth and Jack in Shreveport would love to have some company. If anybody wants to jump in. Let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got there. Someone's been waiting patiently. Hey, welcome to the program.
May I speak to the lady of the house?
I'm sorry. She's otherwise indisposed. I'll have to help you instead.
Well, that's fine. How are you tonight?
I think we'll be doing good if we don't get blown away during the Green News, Jim. I walked outside because the house had begun to rattle. And I stepped out into some, 30-mile-an-hour winds.
Well, I'm sitting on the 8th floor over in Morgantown. I had to be another month. I've got to learn how to walk again. And that's so fun.
Damn, Jim. Okay,
well, it just happens. When you don't use your legs, you'll lose them. And, with every step I take, and it isn't easy initially, I think of FDR when he had all that metal strapped to his leg, and he had no feeling in those legs. I have all the feeling in mine. It's just the muscles are weak. But I remember how he would swing from side to side with a hip brace with two people on each side, and it just makes me think of how lucky I am. At least I have motor control, but you can lose it so quickly if you don't use it. It's a result of being laid up from procedure, Bob. That's it.
Well, I'm saddened to hear it, but by Jove, I'm glad to know that that you're getting the care necessary to get it all back.
Well, that's what I'm doing, and it's really a pain in the tuchus, but that's the way it is. It has to be done. It isn't easy, and they're not easy on you either, let me tell you. But moving forward, this thing with asshole and his declaring a national emergency, well, once he takes that step, he can't go back. And, it's very much akin to like that Enabling Act that you know who passed in August of of 1934.
That's exactly what I thought of, Jim, was the Enabling Act.
It's exactly what it's like. And you know, when he draws in the military and stuff like that, it's going to have like a domino effect on a lot of events. I don't know what's wrong with this man. I'll tell you, I know this is wrong for me to say this, but I'll just say it like this. There are three people, and I'm not going to mention any names, but if I had my way, all three, and I'm not mentioning a name now, would be ushered into the room around a very short table and invited to sit down, and behind them would be a military officer, and they would have on the table a document in which they would either resign, they would have their signature placed on that document, or their brains. And I just throw that out.
I understand, and that's chilling.
Well, you know,
because like, that's the last thing that this country was. I mean, if you can say that the entire design structure of our government was put in place to avoid exactly that.
I know. But I mean, you think of this is the things that people start thinking about, and you know, I'm one of the people. As a matter of fact, I used to be one of the 800,000 people who are not going to get paid tomorrow, probably. I hope they will. I hope something will happen. Because, you know, every federal employee now, when you sign your first SF-50, you must agree to EFT, to have all your salary and everything put into your bank. And that money for those people, it's already there in the bank. It's ready to roll. All they have to do is flash words on those banks, and between the hours of midnight, in some cases, sometimes 8 p.m., sometimes 6 p.m., latest 9 p.m., those accounts will be credited. That's all it takes. That's how it's set up to electronic.
Yeah, it's just electrons.
That's it. It's just bits. It's just zeros and ones. And that guy is going to play. He's playing with fire. He really is. And you know, this country should really. I look at him. He's trying to cause the government to collapse. He wants a government that will collapse, and all the investigations against him will be forgotten, and he will be the guy who's in charge. And he'll have military force and all those crazy people who voted for him in the first place. And, you know, there you go.
Well, and there's another. And this is one of those surprising things, because it goes to show how short-sighted these maggots are, Jim. Our country runs on a system that is based upon precedent.
Yeah, it does.
Well, if he does this, if he declares this national emergency that cloaks him with tremendous cosmic power.
Oh, yeah.
Then that means that one of these days a Democrat's liable to come along and, oh, I don't know, let's try this on for size. Climate change. What if a Democratic president was to come along and say 2021... and say climate change has reached the reached proportions of a national emergency, a threat to the well-being of everybody in this country. So I'm going to exercise unilateral power to make it so that this country takes climate change seriously and takes the steps necessary to combat it.
Well, that would bother
little right question. Little right-wing heads would explode all over this country. Let's try one on. I hereby declare that all coal-fired power plants will be shut down.
No, I don't think that would happen.
Well, I'm not saying it would, but the possibility exists.
I know. But what he's done in reality, he has violated and has made null and void the Fair Labor Standards Act. That's gone.
Well, yeah.
With him.
And the Republicans have been yearning. And see, this is that nexus, Jim, because everything did not start with Trump.
Oh, no.
So getting rid of FLSA, getting rid of anything that favors the ability of working people to stand up for themselves has been a fetish object of the Republican Party for generations. I mean, that's how we got Taft-Hartley.
The FSLA is the linchpin of all of it. You take that away, and you don't have anything, really, as far as the working man is concerned. And maybe that's what all this is part of. It could be a gigantic coup. I'm not trying to scare people. I'm not trying to go crazy with my imagination. But, you know, I have seen things like this happen in history, and it scares the living daylights out of me. I mean, I'm 74. I don't have much longer to be here, and it'll all be gone soon enough for me. But, you know, for some of those people who come after me, they talk about Gen X and Z and this, that, and the other, whatever the hell they call. These people are going to have some type of system in which they can inherit that will work and work freely and reasonably, sanely, and not some type of Fourth Reich or, you know, dictatorship and oligarchical system. That's what they want. They want all this is just, they would love just to take it all away and just level any type of barrier that the working man and the average person, starting with the federal workforce. As you said before, they hate the federal workforce. They want to take all those people who have federal jobs and make them into their little contract people who don't have any way at all to protest anything. You only have a job, and that's it. You don't have any benefits. You don't have any kind of leave. You don't have any kind of sick leave. That's what they want to do. And damn them to hell for doing thinking of a thing like that. But that's where they operate.
But it will be a Republican dream come true, not just a Trump dream come true. I'm not trying to be redundant. But I really think we need to make sure that we understand that.
Well, I hope people do, but I don't think a lot of them don't, because I don't think a lot of them understand how our system works and how dependent it is upon the good faith of people who have decent, objectives in their behavior. And we have one who has never had a good objective in his behavior all of his entire
miserable, misbegotten life.
And on that note, I'm going to close and let somebody else get
well,
on the phone.
Well, before you close, I have to. You got a note from Clarity. Subject line, recovery. Jim, it's not easy, but you got to go through the rebirth portal. Love the cells that want to be loved. Practice walking with music. And she asks, is there music therapy in your hospital?
Well, no, but you know, I do have my, in my room, I've got my laptop here, and we have internet, so that helps a great deal. But tell Clary, I said thank you, and I wish him luck in all of his undertakings as 2019 unfolds, and everybody else in your company and your community, and let's just hope that we can get through this night without that asshole just really
Well, again, a reminder, Stephen Miller is writing the speech, so it's going to be double plus super bad nasty.
Well, I'll tell you, Bob, this is kind of like, since this is Titanic Tuesday, I think that great ship is fixing to hit. If Trump has anything, if Miller has anything to do with it, they're going to rip open compartments that they don't understand that heart flood proof, and they're going to be going down to.
Flank speed, Jim, flank speed.
Well, unfortunately, they just, you know, when I think about that, you know, the Olympics, Titanic sister ship had a head-on collision, and it didn't sink. Only two compartments were flooded, and, of course, they had to, you know, they thought, well, you know, if that happened, nothing could happen to the Titanic, but just a move of that steering wheel put him in such a way where it would hit just on the side and tore it open like a can opener. Well, listen, you take care, and all your people do too.
Well, thank you, Jim, and you just tough it out. I know you got the starch to get the work done.
Yes, sir. Take care. God bless.
All right.
Bye.
Bye now. That's our buddy Jim calling from up Morgantown way. I hope he, and I know we all hope he continues to recuperate and gets back all of his strength. We'll keep the conversation going. A note from Lee in New York, tapping Republicans, responding to Matt in San Francisco's email. Republicans tapping their feet in bathroom stalls? See, they do like to dance. It just has to be their style. In their own personal closets. David in South Carolina stands, subject line, Reichstag fire. I'm afraid of a Reichstag fire moment. And there are many who think that this evening may be that. Jesus, see how he controls the... It'll be nice one of these days when the latest tantrum from a wannabe tyrant it doesn't control the entirety of the news cycle. Let's run back over to the Skype line and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Well, reason why I've been my favorite saying, incognito. I just wanted to check in. I thought I had a cold, and then maybe I thought I had the flu, but no. I have pneumonia.
Oh, I was about to say, you sound kind of pneumonia-ish.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, that sucks a lot.
It does. I mean, man. And I tell you, I'm telling everybody, if you have just the slightest inkling that you think you might have a cold and it lasts more than a day or so, take your ass to the doctor. Because usually I get sick, lasts a couple of days, take some Alka-Seltzer Plus during the day, some NyQuil at night, and I'm good. And when it got to the point where I damn near drank a whole bottle of NyQuil and Desalam and Alka-Seltzer Plus, and I would have maybe 10 minutes of relief, and I'm like, okay. And it was so cold and rainy here, finally, I was going to go to the emergency room on Saturday, but it was cold. And I'm like, I can't. And I remember there's an app called Heal, and they make house calls.
Oh, now.
Yeah, yeah. And so I, and my insurance covered it for most of it.
Damn. Yes.
And so the doctor came, he examined me, and he's like, well, it was the flu, but now it's pneumonia. And I'm like, son of a bitch.
Had you gotten your flu shot?
Fuck yeah, I got my flu shot.
Ah, shit.
Yeah.
I will endeavor not to make you laugh.
Please don't. I will try. The good news is that the antibiotics that the doctor gave me it's some powerful shit. It's called, I think, I can't pronounce, levofloxacin or something like that. And after take, because it's one pill a day for 7 days, and even after the first, within taking it within the first 2 hours, I started feeling better. So today was my first day back to work. Because this hit me, it was weird. I worked Tuesday, and Wednesday I was going to work. I woke up Wednesday, and I'm like, I'm not feeling good, but I'm going to go to work. But just so happens, I didn't get a route. So I'm like, right, fine. As the day progressed on Wednesday, I'm like, I'm not feeling good. So I didn't work on Wednesday, and I'm like, okay, this is bad. So, you know, like I said, it's good. I'll be fine in a couple of days. But, man, Bob, I've gotten flu shots every year for the past 10 years at least. And I've never, the last time I was this sick was, when was Katrina? What year was that?
Oh my God. 2009?
Was it 2009? Has it been? Okay. No, it was before 2000.
Yeah.
2006?
Yeah, I'm sitting here with the internet in front of me. You know, I could ask.
You got the internet, Bob.
I could ask.
Google that shit, man. Well, the last time I got that sick.
2005. 2005.
Okay. It was December of 2004, and I was sick all the way up until February. It would come, I would go and come, and, you know, get better. It would come back, and I had bronchitis / walking pneumonia. And then after that, that's what, in 2005 is when I started getting flu shots, because after that I never went out without having a flu shot. But this is the first year that I have been that sick that I was scared, because couldn't breathe. I would lay down, my lungs would fill up. Have you ever had pneumonia?
Yes. And unfortunately, Agnes is particularly susceptible to it.
It was.
That's why I learned the bit about don't make anybody with pneumonia laugh.
No, don't. It's no fun. It's the absolute worst thing. I mean, it's not the absolute worst thing that could ever happen to somebody, because of course there's far worse thing. And I have insurance, and my prescription was free. So, you know, I am amongst the fortunate, because I have medical insurance. I have a really good prescription drug plan. So, you know, I am, you know, I got to have a doctor come to me. You know, all the things that somebody else, other positions could not have. So I am exceedingly grateful and blessed that I was in that position. But because if I had to get up and go to the emergency room, even still with that, I still have insurance. But because I didn't have to go.
Well, Randy in PA says, whatever that app is, I want it. It was called Heal?
Heal, H-E-A-L, Heal.
I wonder if it's, I wonder if it's in
Nationwide.
Oh, okay.
It is nationwide. I don't know if everybody, but pretty much any major city will have it. And like I said, there's doctors on call, and they take Medicare, Aetna, you know, pretty much all the major insurances. I had to pay, my cost was $100, and you go online. I did it online, but you can still download the app. It's just easier when you do it online. You know, they ask, you know, your name, your age, you know, gender, blah blah blah. They ask you your symptoms, and then it comes up with a chart of the available appointments, and it's a 2-hour window. And they come to your house as a doctor and a physician assistant.
Wow.
yeah, I mean, and they give you, you know, they examine you, you know, take your vitals. I never had.
Well, you're getting some sympathy from Matt in San Francisco. Matt says, Tracy, I got up to 104 degree fever last week. I feel your pain. Tamiflu and a few scripts, and this week I'm back to the living. It's an ass kicker.
Yeah, and if I had gone to the doctor sooner, I would have gotten the Tamiflu, or, you know, and like you said, a couple of prescriptions, and I would have been fine. But like I said, thank goodness this, you know, because I'm like, you know, I'm one of these people, like Jim was talking about. I'm a contract worker. I have no benefits. I have no sick time. So if I don't work, if I'm not in that cab, I have no money. I haven't worked. Today was my first day back to work. So I haven't worked since Wednesday. So, yeah. I mean, Tuesday. So I was basically a week without work.
That hurts.
Yes, it does. I mean, I keep, you know, I take money and keep it aside just so much just in case something like this happens. Unfortunately, I'm okay. But, you know, it's these things, these safeguards that these people are so desperately and viciously trying to take away from people. And I don't even call them people, these subhuman predators that, you know, are sucking the lifeline,
the lizard people.
The lizard people. So it's like, you know, I have been, you know, pretty much, you know, stuck on cable television and stuff. I haven't really been. I hear the news through Jan and her screaming about Trump. And the last thing I heard was that he was saying that, you know, Americans will understand no matter what he does, that even if this takes a year, everybody's going to be behind him. And I'm just like, who are these enablers? Who are the, at what point are we going to take back our country? At what point will people stand up and say, we just cannot stand? I mean, my brother is not a contract worker. He works for a department. Well, he actually works for the government in Atlanta, and I haven't talked to him. I don't know if he's not working or what, because I don't even want to call him and ask him what's going on. You know, because I don't want to upset him. You know, because I like you were saying about, you know, how Reagan fired the air traffic controllers. He can't fire all the TSA agents. How many TSA agents are there? Did you say, Bob? Did you say it's like 50,000?
51,000.
Uh-huh. Can't fire all those people. I mean, you can, but good luck replacing them. I mean, but then again, people are desperate enough to. But the thing is, you got to go through background checks and all sorts of stuff because, you know, you're working in the airport and all these things that you got to go through to replace these people. I mean,
well, yeah, and what's more, let's stop a minute, Tracy, and just consider our national attitude towards something like this. If Macron tried something like this in France,
oh no,
the whole goddamn country would go on strike.
I mean, these people went over them raising gas prices now. Come on, player. And it's Macron who tried to fight, you know, to say, I'm shutting down the government because, you know, I don't get my cheese. I didn't get the kind of wine and cheese that I wanted because I'm French. Yeah, there would be problems.
Well, I mean, and think about it. What the hell? We say, well, okay, federal workers can have a union, but they can't do the one thing that a union, they can't use the one tool that is most effective in a union toolkit in order to achieve their goals, the right to withhold their labor.
Exactly. I mean, so what's the point?
Yeah.
It's some sick shit. It is some absolute heinous. And speaking of, it's so crazy because I was You know, I'm listening to Trump, and I'm listening to all, you know, and thinking about all the stuff that he's been doing and leading up to this, and who he was before he was elected. He was, you know, not basically, but a predator. And it leads me right into another bottom feeding piece of crap. I just finished watching Surviving R. Kelly. Another, you know, all these people who enabled him to be who he is, and nothing was done.
Yeah, I saw I saw Lady Gaga getting some shit during the Golden Globes the other night.
Oh yeah,
for her alleged enabling of R. Kelly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because I'm watching this, and R. Kelly has been problematic since the whole Aaliyah thing back in the early 90s. And nobody said anything. Ebony, Essence, Jet Magazine. This man was damn near 30 years old and married a 15-year-old. And nobody said that's a problem.
Nobody which is kind of odd because ordinarily you would think if an African-American guy did that, there would be howls. Would you not?
But see, the thing is, it comes back to that enabling stuff and that forgiving stuff.
Well, was he insulated by his wealth? Is that what it was?
His wealth, his music. I mean, the man, his music was amazing. And people just turned the blind eye. And, you know, first it was Aaliyah, and then that went away. And then the whole thing with the, you know, the 13, 14-year-old girl that he had sex with and peed on video. And I had forgotten how long. So this happened, the tape was actually done in like, because there was no time date on the tape, so there's no way of proving. That's why they couldn't get it from statutory rape, because they couldn't put an exact date as to when it happened. That's why they went after him for child pornography. So they're like, okay, we're going to get him now. But the thing is, they drug that case out for 6 years, and by the time it came to court, she's a grown woman who's also denying that it was her on the tape. Even though there are people, her relatives, her mother and father denied it was her on the tape. Her father was a guitarist for R. Kelly. As a matter of fact, apparently she's still part of this whole sex cult thing. But see, what's happening, and this is like the same thing that has happened in the Black community since Michael Jackson, O.J., R. Kelly. You got these famous Black men who were accused of terrible things, and the Black community rallying behind them like, this is just them, you know, white people trying to take Black man down and blah, 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 blah. You know, if these women didn't want it, they should have left, not understanding the whole dynamic of when a person is a victim of sexual abuse. And just when you watch this and to see the women that he abused and these girls, women that haven't seen their families, families have been trying to see them for years. And apparently the girl that the whole tape thing was on, she's still with them.
Really?
Yes, she's still with them. She is still with him. She Jesus. Is basically, I mean, and what's so sad about it is, you know, like the whole thing with, you know, everything that's with Trump and all the sexual misconduct things and the things that he's done, and people knew, people didn't, because he all his handlers, all the people that were paid to look the other way, the people, he has video, Bob. Of him going to the, let's go to the mall.
Jesus.
Hunting young girls.
Right. Stalking.
Stalking.
Oh, I do have to share. By the way, we have to back up for just a minute, Tracy. I have to share a note with you from Darlene, a member of the sorority of Leans and a member of, what was that?
The Reverse Oreo Cookie Society.
Yeah, rocks. Yeah. Darlene, with the subject line, did she say incognito? That's seriously hilarious. Thank you for the laugh. I needed it. Get well quickly, Tracy. I had to mute the mic when you said that, too.
Well, you know, sometimes I have to disappear. And like, I think you guys tried to call me on Friday. When you were doing Friday on the front porch, I couldn't talk. I could barely breathe. And I wanted to answer the phone, but I'm like, if I answer the phone, I'm not going to be able to talk. And he's just going to hear me hacking. Like, you know, like I'm hacking up half a lung, but you know,
you sound like Ferris Bueller. This is my last chance. If I do this again, I'm going to have to barf up a lung.
Right. Exactly. But it's, you know, when I was watching Surviving R. Kelly, the big thing, cause his ex-wife was on there, who he basically held. This man controlled these women's going to the bathroom. They had to ask permission to go to the bathroom. They had to ask permission to eat. He would starve them if they disobeyed. He had one girl. Because see, the thing is, I was done with R. Kelly pretty much after... I was taking issues with the whole Aaliyah thing. Like I said, that went away. And the whole P-tape, and then that went away. But there was always something about him. And the whole documentary was like, how with everything that's going on with the Me Too movement, how has this man, who is a black man, escaped prosecution? And you know what it is? Besides, because you know who's being abused are young black girls. And black girls don't matter. Black girls have always been, black women have always been sexualized. Black women and young black girls have always been, you know, considered fast. They've never been considered, you know, that they could actually be victims. And that has been going on since slavery to justify, you know, if you rape a black woman or mistreat a black woman, it's okay because, you know, she doesn't matter. Because she's a whore anyway. So what difference does it make? So you best believe that if R. Kelly was doing this to young white girls.
Different story.
He would have been tarred and feathered, drawn and quartered, crucified, castrated.
And lynched.
Lynched. And then thrown in jail. But see, it's black girls. It's an examination of, you know, because even with all this stuff, I'm watching when they were doing the trial coverage, and I'm watching all these black people and with black women say, blaming the victim, say, again, well, they should have known better, and where were their parents? This all sorts of stuff, never once holding him accountable. Now people are actually starting to hold him accountable. And it's not because, and you know, fortunately, a lot of this more stuff is coming to light with the Me Too movement. But see, my thing is, the only reason why he's being finally, is, you know, finally, you know, taking some traction is the fact that he's not an influencer anymore. He's not the R. Kelly of the 90s and the early 2000s. You know, he hasn't had a hit in years. He's not, you know, the big-time R&B superstar that he used to be. So it's like, you know, people don't have anything to lose now if they distance themselves.
Just as Harvey Weinstein only got taken down when his power waned.
Exactly.
See, you got a note. You got a note from Megan. Tell Tracy ... First, mix honey, lemon, and wild turkey together and eat like cough syrup. When that doesn't work, just drink the wild turkey.
You know what? I was going to do that, but I can't because the antibiotics,
right.
No alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. On the other hand, if you get yourself and I'll continue in a moment with Megan's, with the rest of what Megan said, but if you get yourself a bottle of whiskey and get yourself a quart mason jar,
mm-hmm.
and pour the whiskey in the quart mason jar, and then drop in a good handful of whole cloves.
Ooh.
And the juice of a couple of lemons, and a goodly amount of honey to thicken it, and some cinnamon stick, and put the lid on it and just forget you have it. The next Ooh. the next time you do get an ugly cough or something like that, you take a slug of that and it'll calm things down because the clove will actually numb your esophagus.
Oh.
After the alcohol has pulled out the relevant oils in and made a tincture inside the whiskey.
Nice.
And it's and you can also warm it gently, and it's a damn fine toddy.
Yeah, this stuff. I mean, my whole body hurt. That's the worst part.
Oh, no shit. Yeah, it's miserable. And then there's pneumonia and walking pneumonia.
And yeah, see, that's what I had before.
Yeah. But anyway, Megan continues. Second, I watched all 6 episodes of The Surviving R. Kelly. Having been molested at age 5, I almost vomited watching it. Afterward, I wholeheartedly support R. Kelly joining his brother in spirit, Harvey Weinstein, and being tied to poles and burned alive.
Exactly.
Minods. People don't know who the Minods were. We would probably be a better society if people did think about the Minods once in a while. They were the servants of the god Dionysius. And every now and then they would have their festival or their celebration or whatever. And one lucky soul, guy, would be selected, and the Minods would party with that guy. And we're not sure, I mean, wine was involved, but probably some other substances too. Because after they were done partying with the dude, they would tear him to pieces, limb from limb. Gotta remember the Minods.
Most definitely.
Don't run afoul of the Minods. Well, how did you feel about Green Book getting the Golden Globe?
I was torn. Because I saw, I took the, did I tell
and
you
they,
that?
And they, in the category of comedy or musical.
Musical. Again, you know, and I'm sitting there, I'm watching this, because I didn't watch the Golden Globes live on Sunday, because I was still kind of, you know, recovering, but I have Hulu, and I'm like, you know, let me see if it's on Hulu, because anything basically that's on Channel 4, the next day it's on Hulu, and it was, so I had no idea that Octavia Spencer was the executive producer. Her production company, I guess, produced The Green Book. And I'm sitting there watching it, watching when it won Best Picture, and I'm watching all these white people come up. And I'm sitting there, because first it won for Best Screenplay. And again, the guys, you know, whose father basically what the movie was about. It wasn't about Don Shirley.
Right, and whose family was not consulted in the least in the making of the film.
In the least, you know. And he was going on and on about his dad this and all this. And I'm watching white people. And I'm incensed. Because I'm like, first of all, when you name the movie The Green Book, it was misleading. It was a very misleading title because we talked about what the Green Book was. It was a book so black people could travel safely across the country. And the guy who wrote it, you know, basically wrote it for New York because that's where he was from. He was a postman in New York, Brooklyn, I believe. So it started off in New York and then it spread, you know, nationwide. And The Green Book is in the movie for like 5 minutes to give Viggo Mortensen's character the book and say, well, this is where he can stay. And of course, the only places that they show, and this is another thing that pissed me off, was they showed the establishments that Dr. Shirley stayed in that were, you know, for Black people as seedy, run down, you know, in the worst neighborhoods. You know, it perpetrated the stereotype that anything Black, you know, of course, it's going to be substandard. So, you know, you got that. But but then you have the performance of Mahershala Ali. And he is so transcendent. He is so amazing in everything that he does that you forgive the movie just for his performance. But then I'm watching him, you know, because of course now that all this stuff is coming out about the movie and how problematic, you know, racism for white people, you know, racism 101, that those movies like The Help and all these other, see, I'm not that racist because look, I would never do that, you know, to make white people feel good about racism. I'm watching Mahershala Ali's face during the show, and he's not looking very happy as he's sitting at this table again, surrounded by all these white people. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm wondering, I'm like, is he comfortable being there? How does he feel? Because even Viola Davis has come out and said about how she now has a problem with her Oscar nominated performance in The Help, and that she now looks back and says, you know, as wonderful and amazing an actress she is, she's like, you know, I'm going to start making different choices about the roles that I take on, you know, because I am Viola Davis and I can pick and choose what I will and will not do. And, you know, I'm not an actor, you know, I don't make my money performing for people or anything like that. And if I want to, you know, and I know the way this country is, and I know the way people are, and, you know, the powers that be and what's going to be made and stuff like that. And if you want to work in this industry, in that industry, you're going to have to do what you have to do to work. So I am not in any shape, form, or fashion, you know, berating or, you know, belittling him or Viola Davis for the choices that they made, because they got bills to pay. They want to work. And when they do with their craft, you know, sometimes they got to do what they got to do to get these roles. Now, I don't know if he's ever going to portray a role like that again. Who knows? But it's just, you know, the whitewashing of our history in this country, making everything, you know, the happy Negro, the magical Negro. I the other day we were talking. I was watching another magical Negro. I meant to send you this. I saw this, but this is like right around the time I got sick. I actually Googled magical Negro, and there's a whole Wikipedia article that lists movies about the magical Negro. And it's the magical Negro is a Black character that is inserted.
Yeah, it's an archetype.
It's the archetype of the Black character that's inserted into a movie with the white person protagonist to make, you know, the white person, you know, by touching this person or being around this person, everything becomes okay. A la, you know, the Green Mile and Bagger Vance, the Legend of Bagger Vance and stuff like that. So the latest Magical Negro movie, I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Have you ever heard of a movie called Mr. Church?
I don't think so, no.
It's Eddie Murphy. And take this aside of the fact that, you know, it's a magical Negro movie. But it's a good, I mean, because Eddie Murphy's performance in this movie is so not who Eddie Murphy, you know, think of who Eddie Murphy is. It's a surprisingly touching and heartfelt movie, but it's about Eddie Murphy. It's a black man who comes into the lives of this single mother, white woman with her daughter. And he is seriously, the mother gets sick and her boyfriend hires Eddie Murphy to take care of her because she's dying. And so basically he's helped raise this, you know, preteen white girl. This is set in LA in the 70s. And I'm watching this, and you know, I had seen the movie before by accident. And then I watched it again just last week. And I'm like, oh my God, another before I even heard of the term magical Negro. And I'm watching this, I'm like, oh man, a magical Negro movie. I mean, it's worth watching just to see Eddie Murphy's performance because he's really, really good in it. But again, it's a Negro, a black person in the movie taking care of white people, you know, to make their lives easier and I'm like, can we get to that point where black people can be in movies and, you know, we can be represented as, you know, beyond magical Negroes and maids? I mean, it's like,
you mean fully functioning, totally actualized, self-motivated, right? Yeah,
right. I mean, because, you know, we talked about, you know, the movies that black people have won Oscars for. You know, Denzel Washington won his first Oscar for being a slave. He won his second Oscar for being a crooked cop. Whoopi Goldberg was a con artist. Holly Berry was, I can't even talk about what she was in Monsters Ball. I mean, Lupita Nyong'o, when she won her Oscar, playing a slave. I mean, the movie to this day that I am still pissed off that Denzel Washington did not win the Oscar for was for Malcolm X. Did you see Malcolm X?
Oh, yes. Brilliantly done.
When he did not win the Oscar for that movie, I'm like, yeah, I know why. And like I said, not a Spike Lee fan, but that movie, no matter how many times, I could watch that movie hundreds and hundreds of times. It is so crazy. I'm sitting there watching this movie, knowing how it's going to end, right? And toward the end of the movie, when, you know, he's about to be assassinated, and I'm screaming, turn around! Don't go in there! You're gonna die, you know? And it's like, you know, you're going, well, you know, but I'm praying that, you know, we get to that point where, you know, people are starting to be recognized for their bodies of work and stuff like that. But enough of that. How was your New Year's Eve? Did you and Agnes go out?
We did. We went out. We had a lovely time. It was sober, and but there was... There were great people hanging out, and we had a little bite to eat, and we waited for the new year to come in, and just, it was just lovely getting out. We don't do that a whole lot, but it was wonderful, and I really appreciate you and the whole community making that possible.
Well, I was thinking about you guys because I was like, you know, because like I said, I haven't spoken to you guys, so I haven't called in because a sister was sick, but I, you know, it was, you know, in the back of my mind, like, I wonder how Bob and Agnes went out, if they had a good time. Well, you saw what I did on New Year's Eve.
Yes.
our crab boil. We had lobster. It was lobster, shrimp, crab legs, crab clusters, you know, red potatoes, corn on the cob. Oh, and the last of the connect the sauce, the connect
Oh, you saved some?
Yes.
Ooh, you have more self-control than I do by a long shot, Tracy.
Yes, so, no.
Now all we got to do is get a movement going to get Kaneka to the West Coast.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. So the last of the sausage went into the boil, and there was so much food, Bob.
That may have been better than the first way you did the sausage.
It was. But here's the funny part. So Chad buys all this seafood, right? Because I used to make gumbo, but I had to work on New Year's Day. So I didn't do my gumbo this year. And she assumed that I knew how to do the crab boil. I'm like, I've never done a crab boil. I don't know what. And I'm like, well, I said, Google it, because I didn't know how to do it. You know?
Well, I do know this much, because I was intrigued by it when I was down on the Gulf Coast. So I brought back a couple of jars of roux in a jar.
I mean,
it was serviceable, but I'll never do it again.
Yeah, nah. No, basically, I mean, you just got the Old Bay seasoning, and you throw that in a pot, and you throw the potatoes in and the corn in and stuff, and then let that get soft, and the sausage, and then you throw in your seafood, and next thing you know, crab boil.
Yummy. Oh, that's right. Like Alaskan snow crab, king crab legs, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because crab boil means something entirely different, as Steve from Georgistan would tell us in the chat room.
Oh, yeah.
Crab boil means something entirely different on the Maryland shore.
Right. So it was fun. We, you know, that was how we brought in New Year's Eve. We had our, and ours was sober too. We just did Martinelli's apple cider. And, you know, but it was just so funny because it's like, who was to think that a couple of days later I would be flat on my ass, sick as I am black. Jesus, it was bad.
Well, you sound like you're making progress, but you sound like you're not all the way home yet.
Oh, no. The doctor was very, he said, by today, because I started taking the antibiotic on Sunday, he said, today I'll be about 50 in the 50% range. He said it's going to take at least a week or even two before I'm at 100%, but I'm functioning. I have to go, he told me, not this week but next, to have a follow-up with my doctor. And another thing, he's like, if I wasn't feeling better in the next few days, to give him a call, because then I might have to progress into an inhaler. I don't think it's going to go that bad, because I've had an inhaler before.
They're not fun.
No, they're not. But they do take a, you know, help you breathe. And, you know, breathing is a fun thing. You know, it's a funny thing about the things that you take for granted when you're feeling better, when you're not so much at optimum health, because I haven't been in a while, because I'm not taking care of myself the way I should. But, you know, the things that, you know, like listening to Jim about, you know, being able to walk, you know, or just the simple task of breathing, you know, that I, you know, and had I not taken care, I'm just glad that I finally got the sense to go and get checked or have somebody come and check me out. Because had I waited any longer, God only knows how much sicker.
No, you'd have been in a bad way.
I would have been in a bad way.
By the way, you got a note from Ron and Raleigh. Subject line: Stephen King. Mr. King loves himself some magical Negroes. In all of his books, he has a magic Negro. I don't know where Mr. King is coming from with these portrayals. Is it a meme for people that are usually overlooked but have power? Remember Scatman Crothers in The Shining?
Yes, and it was and like I said, The Green Mile, Michael Clark Duncan.
Oh yeah, God, that yeah. And by the way, Irish Dave says I saw the Don Shirley Trio once.
Really?
Yeah, but I heard him live in my hometown via the Great Concert Series. Classic piano, bass, and cello. Beautiful sounds. Of Green Book, he says it's a white savior film, the Shirley family says. a movie where a white man teaches a black man how to enjoy fried chicken black. And his own culture's music, and which culminates in Tony Lips helping Shirley to give up a stuffy classical music show in favor of pop songs in an all-black nightclub.
Right.
Good fun for the whole family.
Oh, yeah, especially, the scenes when, there's this, a scene where he goes to a bar by himself. First of all, regardless of who this man was, he knew this was a black man in the South in the 60s. There is no fucking way that he would have went into a bar that was, first of all, by himself in a bar that's up in a white town. It wouldn't have happened. That he would not have put himself in that situation. And it's like I said, I had to, I wanted to see the movie to judge for myself, because we talked about it and you're like, because I remember how excited I was. Ooh, the Green Book and all that. And then you're like, yeah, have you read the reviews?
I'm sorry. I am. I'm just a little ray of sunshine.
And I'm like, oh, no. Because I hadn't, not so much the reviews or anything, but I hadn't, the reviews and, then I went to the Root, which is, my go-to thing about, yeah. All things black. And, there was definitely, and there was a sister that writes for them. She's the entertainment reporter. And again, she was like me. We went to see it because, not in support of anybody, but Mahershala Ali, because he's an amazing actor. And I just wanted to see how they portrayed this man. And like I said, I have problems with it.
Are you going to go see Beale Street?
Of course, yes. And as a matter of fact, I had planned on going to see it this past week. But
didn't work out.
I just didn't work out. As a matter of fact, I just finished. When it was announced that the movie was coming out, it was so crazy because I told you that we're doing all this work in the house and putting in, wood floors and stuff like that. And so, we have to.
Oh, good. So you get glue smells too with pneumonia.
Oh, no. Those are in. Those are in. We're good with that. That was already in, but I had taken all my books down. And here's, and I was like, I wonder, do I have a copy of this Beale Street to talk? And I kid you not, Bob, on top of all my books, there was If Beale Street Could Talk. So I reread that, because I haven't read that book in 10 years, if not longer. Have you ever read the book?
No, I have not.
Okay. Do you have you ever read any of James Baldwin's stuff?
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay.
If you enjoy James Baldwin, let me tell you how amazing this book is. I read the book in one day.
Oh, ripped right through it.
I sat there and read that book in one day, a day and a half, because it just, it's not a very thick book. I think maybe 200 pages if that. It's, but the characters and the writing. And my brother William saw it when he was down here visiting, and all that he wrote is sublime. And I'm glad my girl Regina King got another Golden Globe for her portrayal of Tisha's mom.
Well, Megan wants to know what you think of the thought of the butler and Viola Davis in Shonda Rhimes' show How to Get Away with Murder.
Never saw The Butler. Couldn't do it. I wanted to see it, but I actually bought the movie. I own it. I just never watched it. Viola Davis, love her so much. She's one of these women that had she been an actress when I, because we're about the same age. But had there been a Viola Davis when I was a little girl, I might have considered becoming an actress. That's just how much I love her. My issue is like my issues with Kerry Washington
And I you know, it was, I'm happy to see strong black women in leadership roles, but some of the things that they have to do, and especially since these women are written, were created and written by a black woman. On some levels, amazing and exciting, but then on some levels, on another level, it's like Kerry Washington was basically the concubine. There's actually an episode, she calls herself Sally Hemings.
Really?
Yes, she does.
Well, from the distant past, I got a name for you. Dooley Wilson.
Never heard of him.
Oh, but you know who he is. Or was.
Who was he?
Play it, Sam. If she could stand it, I can. Play it.
Ow.
Sam, the piano player in Casablanca.
Another magical Negro.
Well, yeah, but you know what? I only mention this because for some reason or another, I decided to fire up Casablanca last night.
One of my favorite movies.
I had to get the nasty taste of the national championship football game out of my mouth. It was just...
When I heard about it, I meant to text you because I'm like, wait a minute, did I just hear Alabama got their heads handed to them?
No, Clemson just took their ass, held it out, and said, is this your ass? Because we'd like to hand it to you.
I heard it was bad.
It was real bad.
Tua
threw a pick six on the second play from scrimmage, and I thought, no. Because Clemson,
I had no idea what you just meant.
Clemson wasn't Georgia. They wasn't going to be no miracle comeback. And they just ground and ground. But anyway, so I fired up Casablanca, and I started paying attention because I've had my consciousness raised by this program. It's not just what I say, it's what others say to me, and you've taught me a load. And I sat there watching Dooley Wilson's performance as Sam, and yeah, there's a lot of stereotype to it, but there's one thing you can say about Sam, the character of Sam in Casablanca. He is the single most decent human being in the entire goddamn film.
Yes, he is.
And, you know, when he looks at her and says, leave him alone, Miss Elsa, you bad luck to him. Wow.
He's telling the white woman, step off, bitch. Well, you didn't say that, but.
And there is a cringeworthy moment as well. You may recall this. When she first comes into Rick's Café Américain and Ingrid Bergman looks at someone and says, the boy playing the piano, I've seen him somewhere. I'm like, ow!
He's a grown man.
Yeah, that is a grown man.
But he was
a fantastic actor, and among other things, if you want to think it, he had considerable experience with one of those FDR, because you know when FDR was trying to get the country back on track in the Depression, they spent money on everything, and there was something out there called the Federal Theater Project. And
it was amazing.
It kept actors alive.
Mm-hmm.
And back like when I was very, very young, I had a chance to hear a lecture by John Houseman.
Oh, wow.
And he talked extensively about his experience in the National Theater Project. Houseman came out of it. So did, because we were talking about him a week or so ago, so did Orson Welles.
But they made
considerable efforts to be inclusive of African American actors
and artists.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
like the murals and a lot of the sculptures. I mean, I had, when I took Black History, because I had never heard of it, of course, until, you know, and just the breadth of work from African American artists, painters, sculptors, musicians, actors, it you know, chances that they would have never have gotten otherwise. I mean, there was still like, you know, with horrible racism when the relief programs would come through, and Black people, if they got anything, would get less than the white people, you know, of course. But at least they did, depending on where you were. Like you said, there, you know, it enabled Black people to shine and the people show people what these people were capable of, that we were more than what, this, you know, the stereotypical thing people thought of Black people were. So, I mean, will we ever have, I mean, we will never have another program like that because of where we are in this country. But could you imagine if we ever got another something like, you know, another president like FDR? Wouldn't happen, but could you imagine? Just on what needs to be done with the infrastructure alone. The roads, the bridges, you know, throughout this country, how many people would be, you know, would be put back to work just on rebuilding this country? I don't know. I'm sounding like Scott.
No, I suspect that here, I don't know, they've only got 8 minutes, but you realize that this is going to, this dumbass wall is going to be built as a great way to put Americans to work.
No. You really think they're going to go there?
I wouldn't be. There's no lie they won't tell. But I tell you what, I was just looking at Dooley Wilson's filmography. Here are the names of his characters. Baron Skin, and you know, how many white actors have you know, character names like this? Baron Skinner, Porter, Moses, Shadrach Jones, Hector, Sam, accordionist, Gabe Tucker, Oscar, Jason, Porter, a piano player, Anthony James, Aristotle, Pullman Porter, dining car waiter. I know.
Yeah. I know. But on that note, I'm gonna.
Yeah, you need to get your rest. But I'm glad you checked in. And I hope you get to feel a lot better, a lot quick.
I will, because there's drugs, and again, I'm of the fortunate people who have, you know, access to health insurance and, you know, a damn good prescription drug plan. Because I only want to even know how much this my antibiotics alone would have cost. So, on that note, Happy New Year! It's my first call in for 2019. For many more, and I
recommend. And by the way, in your personal case, I recommend against watching the stupid speech in 26 minutes.
No, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it because I'm going to watch it, and just so I can, and I'll be texting you while I'm watching it. Yeah, Jan's like incredulously like,
"Hi, Jan."
Watch the speech. Bob said, "Hi, Jan." Did she hear what she said?
I'm gonna break the television. What?
She said, "Don't break. No, don't break the television."
Oh,
no, I love my TV. No, 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 no.
No shoe throwing.
No shoe throwing. I'm not gonna go there. But I know. Are you gonna watch it?
Oh yeah, I'll be sitting here uploading the file, and I'll just, you know, lash myself to the mast and you know, put the hockey puck in my mouth and duct tape
it. And cover your eyes so you
it'll
so
sound
you
a lot like that.
Your eyes out,
yeah, right.
Like,
yeah,
that.
little mittens and yeah.
Well, Thank you.
It won't be pretty. Trust me.
No, it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad. And I heard you say Stephen Miller wrote the speech.
Yes.
So it's going to be, it's going to be heinous.
It's going to be bad, and it's going to be Nazi.
It's
by the time the eight minutes are passed, we will be wondering what it sounded like in the original German.
The speech is only 8 minutes?
That's what they asked for.
Okay.
I'm trying to find the silver lining. This is yet another opportunity for him to tear his clothing off and stand up naked and start playing with himself in front of the cameras and going
Yeah, exactly. Well, my friend, thank you for talking to me. I had to check in. Al, these aren't dry.
Yeah, you got to go, Tracy. I'm
out.
All right.
I'm out.
Talk, and when you need the recipe for the whiskey thing, just write. Don't talk.
I will.
All right. Later. Bye now. The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver, and I know she's not. It takes a lot to knock Tracy down. And so when she says I've been sick, you know she's sure enough sick. I haven't even gotten around to mentioning the fact that Paul Manafort's lawyers fucked up real big today. I don't know if you saw that or not. But they went to redact something in a pleading, and they screwed up the redaction so that all people had to do was copy it and paste it or turn the text color to white, and everything showed through the blackout redaction. And so what we found out today is that Paul Manafort, and you got to presume that Mueller knows this too, Paul Manafort met in Madrid with his Russian handler, you know, for those people who think that the Russians didn't do anything, and shared polling data about Hillary Clinton with his Russian handler. Now, for those of you who are fond of practicing the art of word knowing, that is a word. No collusion, lots of collusion. Collusion. It's also, from a legal standpoint, and this is considerably more important, something called a fucking conspiracy. So there's that. And, of course, Natalia Veselnitskaya got indicted by not Mueller, by the Southern District of New York today, for her obstruction of justice in the investigation into the Trump Tower meeting. And the net is spread pretty widely so that even if he does assume dictatorial powers, he'll be hard and tries to get rid of Mueller. What's he going to do with the Southern District of New York? Fire them too? At some point in time, why do I say this? You'd like to think that at some point in time, he's going to cross a line that is intolerable to the rest of the country. But then again, we're dealing with Republicans, and they always put power and party ahead of the people of the United States. That's just how they roll. Let's see. Just not a lot of time left in the program. We need to raise $130 just to finish off Monday's fundraising. We are $330 away from being caught up for this second day of the week. And it would be great if we could do more of it, because like I said, there's about $700 in bills that have to be paid this week. And that's just how it goes when you're running a program on the last dry rotted thread of an ancient sneaker shoestring. So whatever we can knock out, and thanks very kindly again to Elizabeth and to Jack in Shreveport and to Dave from Talibandiana, who is extending his offer into Thursday to double the new subscriber's first month subscription. A new $10 a month subscriber, Dave, will double it to 20 for the first month. So that's on the table as well. Let's run over and check in with Scott and see what's going on there. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. I got two things for Tracy. One is just a rhyme that I heard Groucho Marx say once. It's not the cough that carries you off. It's the coffin they carry you off in. And usually if you get things focused that way and you got a good doctor and take all your meds and drink plenty of fluids, you'll see your way through this pneumonia deal. Oh, I've had it once. No fun at all. And I've got a recipe, a quick recipe for, and it doesn't have to be pneumonia. If you've got a heavy cold, this is
good. I do not want a recipe for pneumonia, Scott.
No. This is a recipe to help you. Brew yourself a nice, strong cup of good tea into which you dissolve an original Ricola cough lozenge and add to that a shot of your favorite whiskey or rum. I prefer, is it Captain Morgan's spiced rum?
Yes. And any number of knockoff variations. The Kraken. Yeah,
strong cup of brewed hot tea. Dissolve into it an original Ricola cough drop and add a shot of Captain Black or Captain Morgan's spiced rum or equivalent. And a couple of those will take you home. But that's not why I called.
It's a hell of a lot tastier than NyQuil, too.
Oh, I know. And gives you a similar effect. Trump bullshit bingo. This would be the border wall / government shutdown edition. And you can play along in just a mere matter of minutes. I have created the Trump bullshit bingo card and posted it on your Facebook. So any of your Facebook friends or any of my Facebook friends can print that puppy out. And you say he's only talking for 8 minutes?
Yeah, that's what that means.
How is that even possible? I've never heard him say anything that took anything.
Well, that's
close to
see, but that's what the networks agreed to. And so I would not be, you know, remember, he's a con artist to begin with, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him decide to go off script and start riffing. Because this is going to be one of those Oval Office addresses, and those are not his strong suit because he doesn't have a crowd to feed off of.
Yeah. Well, what can he say in 8 minutes? We're going to build. We first said concrete, then we said, no, we said reinforced concrete, then we said concrete, then we said steel, then we said slatted steel. What is he going to announce tonight? The wall will be built out of uncooked lasagna noodles? I mean,
well,
it's
let's
crazy.
See. He said he wanted a concrete wall, and then he said he wanted a steel wall, and steel is made out of iron. And then Nancy Pelosi said it's a beaded curtain. So they'll probably meet in the middle and make it an iron curtain.
Oh, and yeah, that brings back fond memories of the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s. Jesus. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to be like you. I'll lash myself into the recliner and stick a hockey puck in my mouth. It's like Alex in the movie A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, with the little framework around your eyes, and you just kind of have to stare.
Oh, yeah.
Can't look away.
And I'll never be able to hear Beethoven's Ninth, I guess.
A little of the old Ludwig van.
Yeah, oh, God, what a great movie. I saw that in the theaters when it was first out, sometime, I guess, in the 70s, and I was literally speechless for 20 minutes, you know, walking back to the car. I forget who I was with, but I certainly remember being speechless for 20 minutes. It just walloped me, right?
Well, what blew me away is when I then read the book.
That's a hard book to read. I must try it again, but man, I tried it some years ago, and it was the polyglot language it just threw me curves every which way.
The admixture of Russian and English?
Yeah. It was a great movie, and I'm sure the book was even better because most books are better than the films, but. Well, what is your prediction, seriously, for tonight? What is he going to say?
You know, I honestly, I mean, we're going to hear, it's going to be fear-mongering, and racism and xenophobia and bigotry, and they're gonna cram as much of that into 8 minutes. And if he declares a national emergency and uses those emergency powers, there is going to be, well, I can't even predict that, Scott, because I don't know if the American people have enough starch to object.
Well, see, you got to remember, in sheer numbers, what have we got, about 330 million people in this country?
Yeah, we're a rounding error to the population of the Chinese.
Yeah, okay. You got to figure his 33% or 37%, the ones who are the diehard, you know, Trump zombies, they're, nothing he says or does is going to dissuade them from their fervor. Their fervent support, okay?
No, so not even negate, stripping naked and playing with himself in front of the cameras. Yeah.
Negate that.
He's just making America great again.
Yes, he is, in a big way.
Well, a very tiny mushroom-shaped way, yes.
But, you know, he's going to try to pull something, I think, And it'll be along the lines of emergency powers. Personally, I don't think he's got the balls, if you will, to do a full-fledged emergency powers. His lawyers or his advisors have probably pulled together some lame brain means to do what he wants to do or to try to do it or to say that he's going to do it. See, that's the thing. You can never believe him about anything. How many different versions of what he's going to do just with this one promise, the wall, the barrier, the slatted, the beaded, the uncooked lasagna noodles? You know, it's like mercury in a dish. You can't keep it from sliding around. And you probably shouldn't, because mercury is very toxic, you know?
True that.
But it's like, reality has gone completely to hell with this guy. I never thought I'd live to see it. But
Well, the other thing worth mentioning is that there is other news out there today. I mentioned the Paul Manafort screw-up and the Natalia Veselnitskaya screw-up. Well, the case of Concord... the Russian firm that's been indicted and has been fighting.
Is that Company A?
No, that's not Company A. They're openly in court, and they threw a fit yesterday, and the lawyer tried to get under the federal judge's skin, a Trump appointee, by the way, and wrote a legal brief that included a legal citation to Otter in Animal House.
No, wait a minute. Go ahead.
No, they really did that.
Oh, no.
And the judge and the lawyer got into it. And since the story was reported, they went back into court today and entered another objection, claiming that an entertainer unknown to undersigned counsel by the name of Rachel Maddow reported the story, and it resulted in death threats to the undersigned based on what she had said in her Variety program.
Oh, God.
No shit. That actually happened. But you mentioned Company A, and this is important. Company A lost its case in the Supreme Court today.
Yeah, they refused to even consider it.
They refused to even consider and lifted the stay, and so the sanctions and the financial penalties continue to rack up now because of their refusal to honor the grand jury subpoena. But they still have another case on the subpoena itself. And we're no closer to knowing who Company A is.
Yeah. Oh, you were talking with Tracy about the Federal Theater Project.
Mm-hmm.
This is along those lines, and it comes in the form of a viewing tip, if you can find it. In the late 90s, there was a wonderful documentary, a sad, wonderful documentary narrated by Morgan Freeman, Scandalize My Name, Stories from the Blacklist. And it looks at the confluence of the Red Scare, McCarthyism, and blacklists with post-war activism by African-Americans seeking more and better roles on radio and television and films and things. Scandalize My Name. It's well worth your time. And even if you've seen it before, watch it again in the context of, I haven't seen the Green Book, but my sense of it from what I've heard is it was a good idea that got totally.
Oh, I'll be taking a powder on it.
Yeah. It's so many. I don't even, you know, the last film I saw in a theater was Oliver Stone's movie about W, entitled W, with a letter W. I just, with all, you know, all the madness in theaters in recent years, I'm afraid to go into theaters. I wait till it shows up on Netflix, Amazon, or HBO.
I remember taking Ferg to a movie. There's a big Octoplex or whatever at the Verizon Center Metro stop in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to see a movie with Ferg there and kind of sitting in the theater. You know, usually you sit down in the movie theater, you relax, you know, you got your pop, your oversalted popcorn and your expensive pop.
Yeah.
And you just sort of meld into the moment. That night in that theater in D.C., I was hyper alert.
Yeah. It ceased to be a relaxing break from the everyday routine. It became part of the everyday routine, only with a scary, scary twist.
Right.
What did you go see? Do you recall?
I can't. Mm-hmm. I think it was some superhero movie.
Oh. Now, see, that's another thing I have issue with Hollyweird.
Well, like Dan Fisher said a week or so ago, they don't make movies for our demographic anymore because we are not demographically important.
Yeah, you hit 55 and it's like so long.
Yeah, because the demographic is 28 to 54. Those are the people who have the money.
Yeah.
Or at least Jesus. The people who, it, right.
Jesus. I can sit here and watch a movie on TV, and while it's not the wide screen with surround sound and all that good stuff, it's still an enjoyable experience because I'm not bothered with cell phones going off. I'm not bothered with talking in front of me or behind me. I'm sure as hell not troubled by gunfire breaking out. You know, and is there a trade-off? Yeah, you get to at least enjoy the show and live to tell about it. You know, it's a strange, strange world that we inhabit.
Well, it is that.
And it ain't going to get less strange after tonight. He's going to ratchet it up to a. And the thing about Pence, I was watching. It wasn't the NBC reporter who he was talking to. He was talking to another reporter. He's Trump's guy that Trump is sending out because Trump won't deign to sit down with the press and defend himself on the matter of this fucking wall and this shutdown. No.
Well, it's not that he won't, it's he can't. Because he's gone. He's incapable of forming coherent thoughts.
And the TV networks are going to give someone like that 8 minutes on national television tonight? What the hell are they thinking?
Right, when they denied the same thing to Barack Obama 5 years ago.
Yeah, because they said, well, what he had to say that night was too political, and we don't
allow... On the self-same topic, immigration.
Yes, yeah, interesting how... Well, it's that double standard. It's the double standard, but... The thing about it is my one of many issues with Pence, Trump sends him out. He sends out his guy to bullshit the media in a one-on-one thing. You got to remember, once upon a time, if I'm remembering correctly, Mike Pence was a right-wing radio host.
You are correct.
That alone disqualifies him in terms of rationality and in terms of verifiably true content. And now he's Trump's vice president, so that just ramps it up to even more unbelievability. It's like, oh, and he just sits there looking so calm and so fucking white. It makes me want to puke. Pardon me.
Well, you ain't the onlyest one. Hey, Scott, we got to get out of here, though.
Yeah.
Times are running out, so we will talk soon.
4 minutes, Miss Linska.
Yes, get the hockey puck, lash yourself to the Barca lounger.
And make sure the cat is safe.
Exactly.
All right, Bob.
Later, Scott. Bye now.
See ya.
My buddy Scott in San Diego, going to take one for the team along with me. Let's see, notes coming in. Robert in Australia, will he start on time or will he make everybody wait 20 minutes? Can he read a teleprompter? Will he not blame Democrats? Will it all be a huge waste of everyone's time? Let's see. No, yes. I think I got that in proper order. Lovely note coming from Lady B. Really enjoyed listening to Tracy tonight. Everything she said about movies that feature magical Negroes is true. A 1960s black man would never go into a southern white bar unless he was going to fetch his boss. That man was way too smart for that type of suicidal mission. So anytime a movie tweaks history like that, it makes us look naive and stupid. We blacks are fully realized people, too. We understand nuance and subtlety. We know the dance steps. It's just that many whites never get to see that side, aside from the occasional film like Moonlight. I think times are changing, though. I think young people nowadays are sick of the ignorance, lies, and outright indifference that has been shown when portraying minorities on screen. This is our country, too. We didn't get much credit for it. Didn't get any credit for building up practically all of it. We damn sure didn't get to establish family dynasties behind it. But please don't forget, blacks built the White House and the Capitol. This is our country, too. We will get our due, even if it takes 100 more years to do it. Thanks for the good program, Bob. Thank you for that note, Lady B. You are true. You are correct in all regards. Robert in Australia says, I watched Bird Box last night. The 2 hours flew by. When I heard Sandra Bullock call her two kids boy and girl, I knew it'd be an interesting film. I haven't worked my courage up for that. No, I don't watch scary movies. But, yeah, because I'm a chicken. Mini-Me Mike, Irish Dave says, that would be Paulie's choice for Veep. Remember, Paul Manafort chose Mike Pence. Now, here's a little ray of sunshine. Asa asking, will he resign, Bob? No. Devoutly to be wished, and what a delight that would be, but in a word, no. Just no. So I want to thank everybody for who helped out this evening. Thanks to our subscribers, as always. And thank you very kindly to all of you who jumped in, Jack in Shreveport, and Elizabeth, and Dave from Talibandiana. Thank you very, and thank you very kindly. By the way, I want to make sure I mentioned it. Thank you to Samson for jumping in. And that takes us down to only 300 to go, so tomorrow's fundraising goal is only, well, it's at $500. So if that comes down some more, I'll let everybody know before the deacons pass the plate tomorrow on prayer meeting Wednesday. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to everybody who shares in their precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.